second talk, and Kristen the next one, and he's gonna tell me when my time is up. But it's interesting, so Hal Reed and I have taught up at Ensemble. This is my 20th summer teaching up there. I'll explain that in a minute, but Gillian Prince, who you mentioned, was our board of trustees there. And so Hal and I worked with him up there in northern Michigan for several years. Wonderful man of God. So that was wonderful to hear that. Well, my title is here, and what I'm trying to do is it's going to be more of a narrative with a lot of pictures. Like Hal talked about earlier in his talk, he could give a whole talk on just Gary Larson cartoons, and actually I've done that. I don't have any in here, but I have lots of pictures. And so if ASA is looking for a narrative, they'll have to find it somewhere else, or they can transcribe. So I'll explain some of these pictures, like this one here. Some of these are from 2 days ago. But some of you know Cal DeWitt. Cal DeWitt is a professor emeritus at the University of Wisconsin. And Cal is has been and probably still is a member of ASA. And I've been, Cal's given this talk here at ORU, and for the Oklahoma Academy of Science, and wonderful man that just very energetic in terms of his understanding of creation care biblically and practically. So I'm going to go through that here and then relate it to what I sense an opportunity to do as a professor in biology. So Cal gave a paper where he's talking about dialoguing with a chemistry class, and he was asked, you know, why are you doing this? And he looked at it, why you study science? Well, he said it's really science is one part, and asking how does the world work, or how does this system work, similar to what Oscar was talking about. And then that leads to the ethical part of the triangle in this case. What ought to be? What should we be doing with this science? And then the praxis, what are we going to be doing then? Well, here's my interpretation of teaching here at ORU, but also up at Ensemble with students from other Christian colleges. I look at the science as really excellent science. Be excellent in what we're called to do. And that just doesn't mean just in this science arena, but any arena. And then the practical, or the ethical, sorry, what are we learning? I hear it from students, probably some of you that teach also. You know, why are we learning this? And what's the purpose of this? I'm pre-med, you know, why are you teaching me invertebrate zoology? And so an underlying question in that, it may be me to ask them, well, what's your motivation? Are you just looking at this in that one narrow way? But what about a broader area that you may not see right now? Similar to our conversation earlier today, that, you know, we really should be more interdisciplinary in what we're doing. Understanding a little bit outside our discipline that may help us understand more practical approaches. So that's part of the ethics. And then really translating, how can we use that to enhance our learning? You know, there's probably ways of learning by doing that may help learning better. And I look at it like, how can we go beyond the classroom and involve it with the community? And you'll see the community here in a minute up in northern Michigan with the people that live around lakes, but it could be anything. You know, what is teaching that can involve a practical outgrowth for people, whether it's here in the U.S., Peru, or other places, that can involve listening to them too, because we don't know it all. So if you want to know more, you can Google Cal DeWitt and ASA. There's a great article on there. Ensemble started with, actually out of Taylor University, with Harold Snyder. I don't need to go through that, but if you want to know more of that story. But then Cal DeWitt got involved making it more of an academic arena. And then more recently, Fred Van Dyke is the executive director. Fred's a Wheaton professor, was, and now he's full-time there. And Dave Mahan on the right there is the associate director, and Dave lives locally, has lived locally, worked with the Nature Conservancy before, working with the local land owners. So that's kind of the background. Osabo's vision, I'll let you read that. And the mission, I really appreciate it. It's to inspire and to educate, not just students, but people, to serve, protect, and restore God's earth. And again, there's a lot of things in that sentence there. So I'm gonna unpack that. So the beauty of teaching a field course is being able to go out in the field. I understand we're doing a lab course, you can be in the lab, but I love that hands-on learning. I have some students that's the least enjoyable thing for them, and they learn by their photographic memory or something like that, but I have other students that they don't learn as well that way, but by doing. And I think it's a combination of those things, but I like to take it outside the classroom to outside of God's classroom. So this is my way of looking at it. I'm not going to read this, but I love teaching that way. I teach a marine ecology course where I take students every other year to a marine destination like down in the Caribbean. We've been to Jamaica 3 times, Belize once, Puerto Rico once, Cozumel, Mexico 10 times, and some other countries. But I love being underwater, scuba diving, and then coming up and then talking about it. But for what purpose? You know, why are we learning this? And we'll tie that in a little bit. Well, this is the lakes environment in northern Michigan. If you're from this area, we see kind of a reddish, brownish color of water. But here, it's not unusual to have a transparency going down with a disc we call the Secchi disc to about 8 meters. That's pretty normal. It's not like Crater Lake, but it's not like one of the lakes like Big Soma here. So it's a beautiful way to work. And so you can jerry rig like we have down here. This is shown here, a raft that's normally very stable. And you can take students out and have all the equipment and do the sampling out in the field. Or you can take the pontoon boat. This is actually more recently. So we do have a pontoon boat. And we can take all of our equipment and move on. So in this is my class this summer. There's two here from ORU. There's one from Grace College in Indiana, one from Gordon College in Massachusetts, one from Cedarville, and another one. Anyway, but I get students from Canada, all over US, and sometimes internationally. I want this to be with the local homeowners. Yes, we do take out the Osabo pontoon boat, but as much as I can, I can work with the local homeowners. This is a retired Brigadier General. When I talked to him on the phone, which is a challenge, by the way, it's similar, no internet where you are, Oscar. Well, Helen, I've been there. There's no internet in some of these places, or no cell phone coverage, which is a two-sided sword, so to speak. And really enjoy it or kind of miss that. But when they told me that, I thought, oh boy, we're in for it. It was wonderful. It's not too different from your working with people in the Church of God of Prophecy there in Peru. I mean, it's different, of course, but it is a different background for me. He cares about his land. He actually called me to ask, will you please come out and sample? Because they have invasive species and they're wanting to take care of it. And I'll come back to that. So we do wear life jackets. I don't like to wear them when it's legal to just have them in the boat and not have to wear them, but we're asked to be safer when you're working with students. They can do some crazy things, so We do our life jackets. We work with people young and old, and I'm not saying these people are either. Because I'm in that same group. But it's wonderful. And so actually, when I first started teaching up there in 1996, we do the morning lecture from 8 till 12:15, a little 5-minute break here and there. Students want longer. And then break for lunch, and then the afternoon, weather permitting, from about 1:15 till 5:15 out in the field. And so we were starting with one lake sampling each time, bringing the samples back, processing them. And this summer, it's two lakes every time, except for the very first day. So it's two lakes, and it's because coming out of the woodwork, people calling and saying, please come and sample. The word goes around. In fact, just got one flying here back to Tulsa, and a third lake. So one of the days is going to be a third lake. So these are just some pictures showing working with the students and the lake community owners. So we sample chemistry, biology, physical measurements, and I'll go through just some of these. So this is the chemical measurements. We have good equipment. Most of these are field equipment, like hot kits, if you're familiar with those. So we'll measure alkalinity, hardness, nitrate, phosphate, nitrite sometimes, sulfate, chloride. We'll also measure pH and redox. I won't go through all those unless you want to know later on separately. But then we look at things like temperature, oxygen, light with depth, every meter or every half meter if it's a shallower lake. And I want the students, I just tell them from the beginning, I'm going to teach you, and we're going to go through all these together. But after that, I'm here to help, and I want you to learn every technique. And the next time we go out, don't do the same thing that you did before. And so that by the end of the session, 5 weeks, you'll have done all those. And I want them to learn these for practical reasons. We'll take water samples, surface and the bottom, because things change. And these lakes are normally about 20 to 23 meters deep or more. We'll take plankton samples and Ekman dredge samples. All this kind of tells a story. Here's a looking at a field viewer. We have the specimens back in the microscope, in the lab for the microscope work. This is a quick view for looking at things like the, I call them blood worms, the little larval stages of the dipteran larva. So this is something we want to be observant for. We took an Ekman dredge, so you lower this down the bottom and set down a brass messenger, it closes it, bring it up, put it through the sieve, and I tell them, make sure you hold the sieve over the side of the boat. It makes sense, but it doesn't always happen. And then look for things. Now, there's snails and little clams and lots of aquatic plants in there, but you want to look for things like this. I've not seen zebra mussels. These are zebra mussels until this summer, and it's in one of the lakes. Now, I've seen them in Lake Michigan. The Great Lakes, but I haven't seen them in the inland lakes other than the closest bigger lakes to Lake Michigan or Lake Huron. We're starting to see them in the inland lakes. And I tell the students, these are accidents waiting to happen, but we want to alert the people. Now they know, but they don't know. And that's, again, some of what Oscar was sharing, but these are a big problem, big nuisance, because they alter the food chain. So here we come back to the lab. I try to minimize the in the lab work, but I wanted them to know this. And the chemistry, sometimes those hot kits you can measure to a certain level, but they're not detecting smaller amounts like phosphate. You want to get down to, say, 2 parts per million, 2 parts per million or less, maybe even up 2 parts per billion micrograms per liter. So then you have to use a more sophisticated spectrophotometer. So I've had people from lakes that will bring me a water sample because they see there's something different. They don't know what it is, but it's different. So this sample came in. Does anyone recognize this? This is a spiny water flea. This is large. You can see it without a microscope. This is the Bithyltrepis. It's a genus name. It's an invader from Eurasia. So when the ships come over with tape from the U.S., for example, iron ore, they go to Europe, they download, and then they take on some load, but not as much weight. And so they take on ballast water, they come back. This is a history. In the Great Lakes, it was legal before, the normal. They just empty their ballast water. In the larval stages, you don't see those. Those are microscopic. Or sometimes these that you would see are released, and they just take over. And so they're invasive species. And it's a lot of them. I'll just go through these. So this was brought in by a dentist in a lake right outside Traverse City. This was brought in from a MD in at University of Michigan. She and her husband are both MDs. She's on the faculty there. But they have a summer home cabin up right near where Osabel is. And so she said, something's different. And we looked at it. This is an invasive, not really invasive, but it's an opportunist blue-green algae, Leotrichia. And so we help identify these things and show them. This is Phragmites. This one, it just, one little bit, and it just takes over. Give them an inch, they'll take a mile, sort of principle. This is purple loosestrife. Some of you recognize these. I've talked to local homeowners that had purple loosestrife in their front yard and asked them, and they said, do you know what you have? They said, yeah, I love this purple flower. I said, well, do you know what you have? And they don't. So this is, watch out, because it'll take over, and it'll go on way beyond. And so it's helping them. That the family that live on this side of the lake, Little Twin Lake, we call it, they are actually proponents now to go on and get the biological control and then bring them up. They went from one extreme of planting them to now helping eradicate them. And that's part of the story. Or the rusty crayfish. All these we've studied in the class. This is the one I want to emphasize. This is Eurasian water milfoil. It's an aquatic plant. And it, this one also came from Europe, probably 100 plus years ago. But it has started creeping in from the Great Lakes into the inland lakes. 1996, we went to Manistee Lake. You don't have to worry about where that is. But my last day of that, my first year teaching up there, and in an area about one-fourth the size of this room, one little patch, one of my students from Canada pulled up the sample and said, well, what's this? And I said, because Cal and I talked with one of the U.S. experts on Myriophilus bicatum, which is a genus species, and I recognized it from Ed Nelson's days. And I said, I think it's hard to tell the difference between the native and the introduced invasive, but it, you know, looked like that. So anyway, I talked to him. I talked to Dave Mahan, the associate director, and last day, getting ready to leave, I said, Dave, I think this is the Eurasian water milfoil. He wasn't sure, sent in the DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, and they confirmed it. That was 1996, and by 2002, 2003, it was covering 400 acres of that lake. Huge. When I first sampled Manistee Lake, it's one of about 12 lakes that we sample, it's 860 acres. There's no lake association. So you just kind of meet some people and say, hey, that's a nice looking pontoon boat, would you mind us coming out? Or you ask around, do you, somebody know somebody that lives over there? And again, similar to what you were talking about, Oscar, that worked. Now I have, like we were out there last Thursday, so just a few days ago, and there were two pontoon boats, but there could have been four or five. I've had students working with them with it. They just gave them the keys. In fact, the guy, one on Palm Two, both said, it just, it's always there. Keys always in it. It's yours to use. I love that, to that mutual respect and appreciation of what we're doing. So this is the Eurasia Water Milfoil. These are the two of the homeowners that took us out in their boats, Seth and Wayne, and they love this work. They love working with us about, and vice versa. And that's what I like to call that win-win-win situation. So these are some other homeowners, and other times I take, we have an integrated session where all the classes, six classes, come together on the first day. We've done that. But again, it's working with all the students, all the faculty in this case, working with as many homeowners, trying to help. We have lake community meetings where you can't go to all the lakes, but you can invite them in. You serve free coffee, punch, cookies, they'll come. So this was one of them, your lake and its water quality. And again, it's not too different, Oscar. We've had them up there where they may not be illiterate, I can't even say it, but they're different. Because, I mean, you don't dare cross their property line at nighttime, you'll get shot. I won't go any further than that. But they'll come to you if they're willing. So we have these, and they'll ask good questions. We have other integrated sessions. This one's on deer, but I'm going to skip that for the sake of time. Yes, you can do a high-tech kind of out in the field. Sometimes you do pick up a Wi-Fi signal. Not Wi-Fi, but at least phone signal. But Tim Van Dielen, who's another professor at the University of Wisconsin, teaches wildlife course, sets up his cameras for 24 hours, so that's what he's downloading those. He's a fantastic expert on deer. Doing a dendrochronology or a core sample of a cedar tree to find out the increment of growth rings, interpreting that. Some of these I'm just going to skip. This is what I wanted to get to at the end. So my part is in-depth teaching as much as I can outside the classroom with the local community, and then beyond that, and that's involving the students and research. I tried to add them up last night, started falling asleep, so I decided to forget it. But I think 15 to 20. So these are students that are doing research. Kathleen spent almost as much time underwater as above water in taking samples. Here's a quadrat study for looking at the biomass, which you go down there and collect the muriophon and the other aquatic macrophytes in the area, and then of that quadrat. And this is down about 6 to 12 feet depth. And then collect it, put it in a bag, hold your breath, and then come up. I mean, you can do it quickly. I scuba dove in some of those times, and then I can spend a little bit more time. By the way, this 860-acre lake, as I mentioned, the average depth about 6 foot. So it's a huge pond. So I tell the homeowners, this is also an accident waiting to happen, meaning this is not a deep lake that has a long life that you can pretty much count on it being this way for a long, long, long time. They have to be more careful. And then you can work with them with their septic systems, their garbage disposals, how they fertilize, not using phosphates, for example, on and on and on. Protecting the riparian or littoral zone, the aquatic plants living in them, creating the habitat that will help. A lot of wonderful things in that creation care. I've had a lot of international students, Umo, who Hal knows too, and Dominic, they remember her. Umo came from Nigeria. Her first semester, her dad died. She was not able to go back home to be with her mom and sister for 6 years. Umo lost 100% of her income to come to college. She graduated debt-free because of the homeowners up at Osabo and the alumni, Hal and I working with them, who wanted to help. But for 3 summers, she went up to Osabo, spent the summers up there, and did research, wonderful research. And it was a win-win-win. I keep encouraging her. They loved her. And also Okafor. Umo went from ORU, went to Yale, did her Master of Public Health. Now she's just finished medical school, University of Kentucky. Okafor also finished med school at the same place where Hal Reed's wife finished at Dartmouth. For our kids. And this is not prevention research, but it's practical. And that's what they really need to learn, right, Michael? It's not medical research, but it's research. And so lots of data, lots of training. So Umo taught Kimmy and Jen, because Umo was there before, and then Jen and Kimmy continued on. Jen's finished med school. Kimmy's in her PhD program at University of Minnesota now. Miriam, same thing, looking at the fecal coliform versus non-fecal coliform bacteria, how that could vary with rain or dry times. And she just finished med school. A lot of the students that we have are pre-meds. And I won't go through all these. There's two students working up there this summer on Manistee Lake, and actually they're funded both years, this summer and last summer, from the Manistee Lake people. And so that's what this story is. I've had one student from Osabo, from, I've forgotten the name of the college, anyway, another Christian college, and so Nate went on to the University of Michigan where I graduated, my PhD, and now he's finished his PhD, and now he's teaching at Grace College. This is his testimony. Again, don't have time for all of that, but I wanted to encourage, similar to Oscar, similar to what we're going to hear next, come up, that this is an opportunity to grow outside of what we normally do, and to be able to cross new boundaries. I wasn't paying attention to time, so hopefully, yeah, good. Any questions? Yes.
I taught a course, in fact, I put together a senior mechanical engineering course, which I call Green Design. It was actually green design and manufacturing and life cycle assessment.
I like that.
And sometimes I felt like we were teaching mechanical engineers landfill supply. So, you know, the engineers were busily designing the culture that leads to all this pollution and environmental impacts without adequate consideration of that. And it strikes me that biology and environmental sciences and engineering design need to be married to get the whole picture so we can start solving the problem at its source rather than just after we've done it.
I agree. In the last 6 years or so, Hal and I have been asked to teach the environmental science program, and I've been involved with biofuels with sustainability. So the first time in my life I'm working with engineers. Mechanical and chemical, and it's stretched me, and then working with business people on the sustainability part of people playing at profit.
Okay, business and sociology needs to be brought in too, don't
they? Yes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. The people playing at profit, and I have a paper coming out this summer, I hope, on a life cycle analysis using that. Maybe next year we can talk about that.
We'll see you.
Yeah.